and welcome to another episode of From No Crypto to No Crypto. I'm your host, the Crypto Coach, Blockchain Wayne. Today, I'm going to cover the Bitcoin halving, dive into that. It's coming up. It's right around the corner. So let's talk about the history of Bitcoin, the history of the halving, and what that could mean for potential future states of Bitcoin, Bitcoin supply, Bitcoin price. So I'm going to touch on all of that today. It's going to be shorter than a normal podcast, but I really wanted to touch on this because there's so much misconception around the halving. I see a lot of posts on social media and across different platforms where people are saying, what's happening at the halving? Does that mean that what I own in Bitcoin is getting cut in half? Does that mean that the price is going to be cut in half? And a lot of other crazy scenarios. So let's talk about what it is. Bitcoin is designed as a deflationary asset, which means that the supply is fixed. It is not more being created. There is a set number, and that number is not going to be exceeded. So let's back up. So January 3rd, 2009, the Bitcoin network went live. And when that network went live, it was launched by Satoshi Nakamoto, an anonymous figure, still not known to this day who he, she, or they were. But the network was launched, and more computers started to run the Bitcoin network, which would create what we call today the Bitcoin blockchain. That term wasn't around when Bitcoin first launched. It's actually been coined since. But that's what happened back then. And it was programmed into the code that there's only going to be 21 million total Bitcoin. 21 million total, but they weren't all released at one time. They were set on a release schedule of every block. Roughly every 10 minutes, new Bitcoin is created. And that number is not going to exceed 21 million. Right now, over 19 million Bitcoin have been mined, but that number keeps getting less and less that are released each year because of what's called a halving event. Now, when the Bitcoin network went live, initially there was 50 Bitcoin per block that was released, per block of information, roughly every 10 minutes. Now, what is a block? All these computers that are running the Bitcoin blockchain, they're competing to solve a problem, an arbitrary math problem that's pretty complex. And whoever solves that first earns that block reward. They earn the right to receive that block reward and also associated fees from transactions during that. And initially that was set at 50 per block. And that is designed to keep the network secure, keep the network running, and also to incentivize those that are running the network. So 50 Bitcoin were released every 10 minutes up until the time we hit 210,000 blocks. Now it's roughly every 4 years. That's why it's not exactly every 4 years, because it does vary some. And so 50 Bitcoin were released until the first 210,000 blocks were created. Now, back to the block time. Now, the block time is roughly every 10 minutes, and the Bitcoin blockchain is designed to adjust difficulty to mine if those blocks are being made too fast or made too slow. So, perfect example, if those blocks are happening faster than every 10 minutes, there's a periodic check where the difficulty of those equations that computers are solving will increase, which will try to get that block time balanced back to that 10-minute time frame. If they're happening too slow, difficulty will drop, which means that they would try to basically make it to where blocks are found faster and solved. So 50 Bitcoin every block for 210,000 blocks. So November 28, 2012, we saw that block reward go from 50 to 25. That was the first halving event. The next halving event, July 9th, 2016, the block halving went from 25 to 12.5. Okay. And then May 11th, 2020, that went from 12.5 to 6.25. And what we're looking to see, roughly estimated around April 20th, is we're going to go from 6.25 to 3.125. So that number that's being released on the market is becoming slower and slower and slower. And remember, these are being released every 10 minutes. So that's why, yes, we may have mined 19 million plus Bitcoin already, but the remaining Bitcoin to be mined still will last over another 100 plus years before the final Bitcoin is completely mined, because those halving rewards are going to happen roughly four years. And so how does that affect supply? Well, think about it. The demand and the adoption of Bitcoin in the early days was next to zero. Almost nothing. There was no demand. There wasn't even a market price at first. And so there wasn't a lot of demand. So some people were doing it based off of just the speculation, checking out these new networks. And then as it began to increase, you see more and more awareness of Bitcoin, more and more education around what Bitcoin is. And you see more and more adoption fostering every day. Now, the opposite of what we're seeing with Bitcoin is what we see with the US dollar and many other fiat or government issued currencies, which is inflation. Inflation happens when you constantly expand the money supply. And when you can create money cheaply, those that are holding that money are hurt the most because they've been saving and saving and saving money. And then governments come in, print trillions of dollars, and then their savings may still have the same dollar value. That purchasing power is reduced drastically. And that's what has been happening for many people with inflationary economies. That's what we've seen happen just over the time we saw during 2020 down into the pandemic where trillions of dollars were printed. Economists, you know, quote unquote economists were saying that this wasn't going to cause inflation. And lo and behold, what happens? Now, you can blame inflation on corporate greed and saying like, oh, these companies are making record profit. Most people don't realize that most companies base their pricing off of future replacement costs. So if they bought some supplies at a certain amount, produced a product, and then that product to repurchase it down the road is going to go up in price, they're not going to wait for that. They're going to raise their prices now. So you'll see that happen where, yeah, they may have a record profit year, but that's going to balance out over the next few years because cost of everything globally are going up. We don't live in a bubble where you can say if we print more dollars, it's not going to impact the price of everything because we import a lot of things to the U.S. And when those dollars become less valuable, it costs us more to get those products. So that's a little bit about the economy, about Bitcoin. But let's talk about some statistics. I will go back to those halving dates and tell you what's happened with Bitcoin, the Bitcoin halving over time. So November 28, 2012, the first halving event, when the Bitcoin blocks went from 50 Bitcoin per block to 25, then at that time, Bitcoin was priced at $11. 6 months later, it was $128. And 6 months later than that, it went all the way up to $970. What happened? It wasn't an immediate snap saying, okay, the halving happened, now Bitcoin price is going to increase. In fact, there was no history to go off of then. But the supply of Bitcoin that was coming, new supply of Bitcoin that was coming to the market was reduced and the demand for Bitcoin was going up. And that's why you see that price squeeze. July 9th, 2016, when the Bitcoin block reward went from 25 to 12.5, at that time, Bitcoin price was $660. 1 year later, it was $2,600. And only 4 months after that, it hit $19,000. Drastic jump. May 11th, 2020, the number of Bitcoins went from 12.5 to 6.25. And at that time, Bitcoin was $8,665. 1 year later, Bitcoin hit $55,000. So now, right now, we're looking at Bitcoin. We've seen a lot more institutional demand, a lot of the, just call it demand, the use case. We're seeing companies start to adopt Bitcoin. Countries are starting to adopt and embrace Bitcoin. And right now, we're looking at a halving that's happening within the next couple of weeks, roughly around April 20th. Bitcoin is sitting around $67,000. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, and nobody can know for sure, that Bitcoin right after the halving is going to drastically go up. Hell, it may go down. I said that after the ETF because the price could be suppressed and manipulated for a short period of time, but you can't suppress the demand for Bitcoin that continues to increase. So after the halving, or maybe even right before the halving, we may see a drastic drop in the price of Bitcoin. But guess what? Over the long term, I'm not looking at today. I'm not looking at tomorrow. For me, it's the future of Bitcoin, the future of money in general. And I feel that the market price for Bitcoin in the next couple of years is going to be drastically more than it is now. And like I said, I just looked at it, it's around $67,000 per one Bitcoin. And that is because the demand continues to rise. More and more institutional money is coming in. More and more countries are looking at how to adopt Bitcoin. Now, in the U.S., many of you listening to this might be in the U.S. like I am, and we haven't seen inflation as bad as we've seen in other places, or we haven't experienced the currency collapse like many have. So to us, Bitcoin is just a speculative play. But to people that live in countries like Zimbabwe, Venezuela, and others, they've seen currency collapses. They've seen their money become worthless overnight, and they understand the value of a currency like Bitcoin that is decentralized, that is not controlled by any one entity. You see my shirt I'm wearing right now, separation of money and state. That's not just a catchy saying. It's a philosophy that when governments and central entities get involved in money, it can become corrupted. We need decentralized money. The internet was a decentralization of information. There was a lot of things that came about, a lot more information became available with access to the internet. It was open and available to everyone. And Bitcoin is the same decentralization and openness of money, which is what we need, as money has been used as a tool to exclude, to corrupt, to really basically only enrich those that are in creation of the money supply. All Bitcoin does is take away that ability for any one person to corrupt that money supply. And that is a beautiful thing, because we can replace everybody in power, anybody over central banks, anybody over government tomorrow, and we can replace them with people that have better morals, better intentions, and it won't take long for those systems to be corrupted again, because it's not about the people. We're people. People in general are fallible. It's about having systems in place that are open, transparent, immutable, and that's what the Bitcoin blockchain is. So that's why this halving is so important. That's why Bitcoin is so important. And yes, I'm an advocate of cryptocurrency in general. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of crap out there. There's a lot of cryptocurrencies that are garbage. We see new meme coins coming out every day. And that's just an open and free market. Anybody can create it. Now, am I saying that no meme coins will be relevant in the future? No, not absolutely. But those meme coins will have to be more than just a funny meme and a community that's just betting on the price go up. There's got to be more utility, more use case around it. But this is not a zero-sum game either. I still believe Bitcoin is where we should look. It's the perfect example of money. Any other cryptocurrency created since Bitcoin has been trying to solve a different problem than what Bitcoin can do. Bitcoin is amazing. It's great money, but it can't do anything and everything. And that's why there's other networks out there. There's also a sliding scale of decentralization from zero to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the most decentralized network in the world. And that's why it's so strong. That's why it's so secure. And there's trade-offs. You try to make a network that's faster than Bitcoin, you may have less decentralization or less security, and vice versa. So it's important to understand that. But there are trade-offs. Like the same money that I want to assets I want to hold for the long term, or that I want to use to purchase, say, real estate, is not the same digital currency or digital asset that I'm going to use to go pay for a bag of chips at the store. And I don't need as much security in that as I need in Bitcoin and the mass amount that may be stored there. So that's why there's sliding scale. So just understand that there's different consensus methods. Bitcoin is proof of work, which is what we're talking about here with the block rewards. What I described before was called mining. Those computers are doing what's called mining. They're trying to solve a problem to earn that reward, right? And that's why it's called mining. Many people hear mining and they don't understand it. That's exactly what it is. But that's in a proof of work system. There has to be work to do that. Proof of stake is a different scenario, and there's pros and cons to proof of stake. And there's a lot of different proof of stake consensus methods, because you have to avoid the fact that you have to try to prevent for the fact that anybody with a certain amount of money and wealth could buy their stake and control the network, where they put up a stake of a certain coin or token that if they act maliciously, they could lose that stake. So it's in their best interest to keep the network going, to preserve the value in what they have. So there's trade-offs there, and there's a lot of different things, but definitely dive into it. If you're in the crypto space or you're curious, start with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the first place to go. In fact, I tell people start before that. Look back at the history of money. Understand what money is and what money isn't. Look at how the Federal Reserve was created, what it's done since its creation, what fractional reserve banking has done. And that's what I understood first before I truly understood Bitcoin. And that's when it hit me. I was like, holy crap. I may not understand Bitcoin yet, but I know we need something better, something different for our future, because this is headed for a disaster. With dollar and current fiat currencies, we continue to just print more currency and kick the can down the road, and all we're doing is borrowing from future generations. So our kids, our grandkids, and those future generations, what are we going to leave them with? Are we going to leave them with more and more mounting debt and just basically trying to provide for a living that's unsustainable based on current wages? Are we going to provide them a new system, a system that has a lot more potential? And you may say Bitcoin's not new, but think about it. I mean, how long does it take for new monetary systems to kick off? You know, and the technology may accelerate that, but you're talking 30, 40, 50 years before people truly accept it and adopt it as a whole. I mean, just look at credit cards in general. Imagine when the first person tried to pay with a credit card at a business. I'm sure there was a lot of places where they didn't accept it. You couldn't go, you couldn't use it. And people are like, what's the point of this card I have in my hand? I can't spend it anywhere. That's where we are with Bitcoin. But guess what? History may not repeat itself exactly, but there's a lot of similarity. So when you look at that adoption cycle of just, say, the credit card, then you're going to see the same thing happen. more and more retailers and vendors are going to start to accept cryptocurrencies for payment, and Bitcoin is going to be one of the main ones. There's going to be a lot of different tools and systems that are going to come out. And so it's important to understand and learn about this now. For many of us, many of you listening, this may initially start out as a speculative bet. Don't get me wrong. I'm also betting on it. I'm looking to enhance our financial future by participating in this. But it's also important to understand that this has the potential to change the world, include people in financial systems that have not had access to financial systems in the past, whether it's because of where they live, what side of an imaginary border they were born on, just circumstances where poverty continues to circulate throughout generations because they don't have access to the financial tools they need to make a better life for themselves. And many of us that have had a potential to do that in the past want to share that with others because there's so many different things that we could see happen from the adoption of Bitcoin and in general cryptocurrencies. Don't get me wrong. There's 20, 30, 40,000 different cryptocurrencies out there. 99% of them are garbage, but that 1% included with Bitcoin is going to help change the world for the better. So dive in. If you're new to Bitcoin, understand what it is, start learning about it, read the Bitcoin white paper. If you haven't had, it's in the description of this podcast, along with some other links to learn more about Bitcoin, Bitcoin's history, the halving history, and learn more about that. And then you'll have a better understanding, and it'll be more than just a speculative bet, or you'll be able to respond to people when they say, why is Bitcoin so important? It's imaginary money. I can't touch it. How does it have value? And you'll be able to explain those things, like why does it have value? Why is it important? And why is this halving event so important? It's another indicator. It's another flag in the sand saying this is, you know, this monetary policy cannot be corrupted. Can the accumulation of Bitcoin centralize into certain areas? Absolutely. But guess what? Your and I's Bitcoin just going to become more and more valuable because even if someone holds a majority of the Bitcoin, They don't own the network. The network continues, but then there's a higher demand and our values go up. And Bitcoin is made to be divisible to where even if one Bitcoin were to hit, say, $1 million, I could still send you a few dollars worth of Bitcoin. That's why it's because we think of dollars and cents, most of us, or something similar in your currency, where you may only have 100 pennies per dollar, when a 0.00. No, this is Bitcoin is divisible to 8 places behind a decimal point, which means that allows you to have, like I said, if Bitcoin is $1 million, we can still transact with a few dollars worth of Bitcoin. So that's the halving event. It's coming up right around. I know some people in the industry are hoping it falls on 420. Those of you listening may know why, but either way, it's going to happen soon. It's baked into the code. No one can control it. No government state can say, you know what? Maybe we should just let it run for a little longer at this current rate. It's not going to happen. It's going to get cut in half. So new supply coming into the market is going to continue to go down. Demand's going up. You don't have to be an economist to understand what can happen there. Not today, not tomorrow, but definitely in the long term. And like I told you, there could be a lot of volatility along the way. We could see some drastic drops before it goes up. If you look at what happened, after each one of those halving cycles, it wasn't like we hit the halving and it went straight up. I'm showing you the end result or the result a year or 18 months later. But along there was some drastic drops, some great opportunities. So make sure to look out for those as well. So that's it for the Bitcoin halving. Hopefully this was helpful. Hopefully you understand a little bit more about it. Drop some comments if you want to know more about the Bitcoin halving and any other events that are coming up in the crypto space. But that's it, everybody. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode. Have a great day.